Hello, good people. It's Ray, and I hope this podcast finds you well. I hope that you're managing to make the best of things in these challenging and interesting times. We've got some items of housekeeping before we start. First of all, it's just worth a mention to say that we realized that there wasn't any great point in putting episode numbers to our podcasts because there's no particular requirement to listen to them in any chronological order. You can dip in and out of them as you please based on subject matter. So we won't be putting episode numbers on our podcasts anymore. We've been doing a lot of recording recently, partly driven by the social distancing and isolation. So we've been doing a lot of recording. We've got a lot of editing to do, but we've got a lot of interesting interviews, conversations and topics coming up for your listening delight. And just on that, we would really appreciate if you access us via iTunes or Spotify or whatever platform you particularly use for your podcasts. If you would be so awfully kind as to give us a rating and a review, that would be fantastic. Our content is free to everybody and always will be, but it's a great bonus to us to get that feedback and to get that recognition in the podcast charts. So we thank you for taking your time to do that in advance. So Sophie and Gary and I sat down and we started to talk about the small topic of culture. Culture and organizational culture is something that touches on pretty much everything that we talk about. So this by no means is the definitive on culture. It by no means puts it to bed, end of discussion, anything like that. It's really just a taster, just to engage and spark the conversation. And we'd love to hear your feedback. You can email us at podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. So this particular podcast is part one of two. The second one will be coming out next Monday, and you'll be able to hear that in the usual places. This is part one of culture. We hope you enjoy. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it. Can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed. They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate. Rub the lamp, lad. Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, coming to you via Zoom. And today in the hub, we've got Sophie and Gary. Say hello, Sophie.
Hiya.
Say hello, Gary.
Hello.
Yeah, we're not going to do the kids TV thing again. I wanted to talk about culture. So it's interesting because there's been obviously a lot of conversations recently in the media and out of the media about, you know, this been an opportunity to reset and stuff like that, and companies actually finding out that where they thought they were secure and everything else, they're actually quite vulnerable. And then I started looking at, you know, the whole setup of some of our larger organizations and why, you know, why certain things are the way they are in large organizations. I found it interesting that the average tenure for a chief exec of a FTSE 100 company is 5.5 years. I think that's significant because that doesn't seem like a very long time to engender a culture. And where you've got people at the top being regularly recycled, you wonder how any vision, purpose, mission statement for any organization is actually carried through. Because actually, I think a lot of that turnover, that churn has been pushed by shareholders just looking at the very short-term bottom line. And the fact that a lot of C-suite executives' remuneration is linked to stock holding and share price and stuff like that suggests that, because there's this push towards being very short term in terms of investors, you know, we want to try and get as much out of the company in as short a period of time and then move on. There's this constant drive for bottom line without any real focus on long term sustainability and long term performance. And so that then made me think about culture and whether actually we're going backwards in terms of organizations and the importance that they place on having strong culture and defined culture. And so I wanted to take this opportunity to get some input from you guys as regards to the whole conversation around culture. So what is it? You know, how does it work? How do you see it? Et cetera, et cetera. So culture, what do we mean when we talk about culture?
Well, a lot of my work is centered around culture. In fact, that's the main premise of my business and what I do. So this is a very interesting question, a very key topic, actually, I think, especially given the situation that we're currently facing. And for me, culture is the thoughts, the feelings, the actions of the organization. And when I say thoughts and feelings, it's not, you know, it's not human. It doesn't have thoughts and feelings in the same way. But it's the way by which your staff are guided to make certain decisions. There's like an underlying assumptions, an underlying feeling as to this is a culture that supports X or this is a culture that supports Y, and therefore we make decisions in line with that. And that is where your values and your behaviours and your mission statement become absolutely crucial to that. It's the thing by which you should be assessing every decision you make against. And I think that's one of the key things that is missing or is starting to be missing right now. I've started quite an interesting discussion online over people will remember your culture for the bad times and not for the good. So it's all wonderful when your organization is profitable, or if you work in the public sector like I mainly do, everything's working well and there's no major pandemic or issues within the service that you're providing. That's wonderful. But what you will find is your staff will define your culture and how they feel from a psychological safety perspective about your culture based on how you dealt with the bad times, how you dealt with the financial downturn, how you dealt with the fact that perhaps you've got people in your organisation who are suffering with COVID-19 or have even died of this awful virus, and how you dealt with that, how you provided the safety your staff needed. That, for me, is a very long-winded definition of culture.
Gary?
For me, culture, and I think we are experiencing a test of culture for organisations right now, a very specific one. And for me, it's around simple questions of, for an organisation, you know, who we are, how we are, so the way that we do things, and also the way that we just are. So it's the doing and the being. And that, as Sophie said, it's very much down to kind of those values. Do companies have values? Are they genuine values? And are they operating and living to those values? That will show up, hopefully, when the times are good. But right now, what I'm seeing, and the companies that are impressing me, are the ones who are demonstrating that they've got these strong values, and they're not just thinking about short-termism. They're also thinking about how they're treating people, you know, whatever decisions have to be made. And I think it will impact, you know, not just the employees, but also I think customers. They'll be looking at, you know, how are these companies operating right now? Are they operating from a good place, or do they seem to be, you know, kind of just, well, we'll just look after the C-suite and the shareholders, and, you know, we'll let things like, you know, customer service and just the, you know, way we treat people, that kind of goes out the window a bit. So it's fascinating to watch how different organizations are doing things at the moment.
That's very interesting, what you both say there, because my experience is that organizations talk about their culture a lot, but actually it's just words. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you look at mission statements, for example, it's generally the same stuff. It's blah, blah, shareholders, blah, blah, customers, blah, 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 people. But it's meaningless drivel. It's got no direction. It doesn't tell you anything about the organization. It's just they've engaged a consultant to come up with some clever words that actually don't mean anything. And even worse than that, what I've actually found within organizations that I've worked with, not in every case, I hasten to add, but in a lot of cases, the majority of cases, the culture that exists in the organization and the culture that the C-suite believe exists in the organization are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a disconnection there between what the leadership team believe is the culture of the organization and what the reality is on the ground. And you've got to wonder, I mean, we've talked before about getting back to the floor and all that sort of thing. You've got to ask yourself the question, is that perhaps a communication issue? You know, do our executives actually place enough importance and enough effort and energy into making sure that the culture of the organization is communicated? Because whether you're a customer or a potential employee or a long-term employee, really the culture of the organization needs to be in your face, because it needs to be demonstrated by everything that that organization says and does. And for me, it's just a lot of hollowness around culture. People have picked up on this whole thing of, oh, you know, we must have a strong culture and we must demonstrate our culture and it must be socially responsible and look after people and everything else. And then they produce these fantastic strap lines and mission statements. And as soon as you walk in the door, you realize that this is not the reality.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you what I see. So like I said, the vast majority of my work is about transforming organizational cultures from being in a place of perhaps what you've just described there, Ray, actually, around senior leadership having quite a different take on culture versus how staff see it. And there are two fundamental things that I see cropping up here. Is one, the culture hasn't been co-created. So what's happened is the C-suite, the leaders in the organisation have all got together and have said, this is the vision, okay? This is what we think our values are, et cetera, et cetera. And because we are the leaders and we're setting this vision, we are now going to just tell you, this is how you now need to behave. So they'll come up with some value statements and they'll say, oh, yeah, these look good. And the way we're going to tell you that is we're going to stick them up on the wall. As you say, there are going to be some great statements on the wall in reception, and we might even have some mugs printed, and your screensaver or the background of your computer will have it on there. And what we will do is we will produce some physical artifacts that say this is what we believe in, this is what drives us. Which then comes on to the second thing, is that people can't be told how to behave. They've got to be shown how to behave, and they've got to believe in the fact that they should be behaving in that way. And the downfall is that when you're trying to create a culture, so many organisations seem to think that posters on the walls and telling people, oh, today you have to be honest, today you have to act with integrity, is going to bring that behaviour about. And that doesn't happen like that. They have to see it role modelled, and they have to be shown the tools and techniques and a kind of a psychological understanding of what that physically means to do those things in order for them to exhibit that behaviour.
Yeah, and isn't it frightening if an organisation has to put a poster up saying honesty and integrity?
But they all do.
Yeah.
But they all do.
Because they're very buzzwordy, kind of impressive-looking things, but actually they're meaningless because they're just nouns. They're not verbs.
Yeah, no action. Exactly.
No, I was just going to add on to that and just say, yeah, if I saw somebody expressing or an organisation expressing values as honesty and integrity, I'd just say you need to remove those from your values list, because we take those as a given.
You should, absolutely you should. But let me tell you how many organisations I work with that have those in their value statements. It's incredible how many do. And the fact they have to put them up on the wall, they have to tell you that this is what we believe in, is a problem, because you as a consumer or you as a member of staff should know that.
Yes.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah, you know the organisations that you know exhibit those behaviours, and you know the organisations that don't. But they're not telling you that. They're not saying, oh, we're an organisation that operates in honesty and integrity. They're just being it. And that's the difference to a culture that is absolutely truly aligned and everybody is in line with that culture and they're all singing from the same hymn sheet versus a disjointed culture. Because you shouldn't need to put those words up at all. It should be something that everyone, like I said at the beginning, is thinking and feeling without needing that.
Yeah. And when you advertise positions, it almost should be the very first block of text in the advert. This is absolutely our culture. Because like I did want to ask you guys about this, what your thoughts are on cultural fit over competence, because we often make our decisions based on, and our adverts reflect this for our people, by the way. So we make all of these technical requirements, you know, you have to have a degree in this or experience of that or whatever. And then we'll maybe put something in at the bottom about our culture, when actually, you know, a lot of effective leaders will tell you it's virtually impossible to teach somebody certain behaviors that to fit in with the organization. If you get the right cultural fit, you can basically teach anybody the technical skills that they need to have with a certain level of baseline of competence, of course. But actually, that the most and what absolutely destroys organizations and teams is when they end up with that imbalance of people. People are there for the wrong reasons. Mm-mm. That just completely, we've probably all had experiences where, you know, we've worked in a good team and then somebody has come into the team who isn't the right cultural fit and it's completely thrown everything up in the air. And that's not to say that there's anything wrong with that individual. It's just that, like, if you look at it as an individual person thing. So I know people, as an Irish person, we have a lot of immigration from Ireland. And I know people who've emigrated to Australia and, you know, have never looked back. Absolutely love it. You know, it really fits in with the sort of person that they want to be. And it really chimes with what they believe about themselves. I've had other people go there with, you know, with exactly the same experience and competencies and everything else, and lasted, you could count it in the weeks before they've come back, because it just didn't suit them culturally. And there's nothing wrong with Australia and there's nothing wrong with those individuals. It's just that, you know, you sometimes you're just the right person in the wrong place, and there's nothing wrong with that. And what you find in terms of it, like internationally, is people coalesce to where they feel psychologically safe and where they feel they fit in. So, you know, if you maybe want to be a very cosmopolitan, sort of a little bit leftish, you know, person, there's certain parts of London that you might want to find yourself in, the likes of Shoreditch and everything else. If you're somebody who has different values and feels differently about yourself, maybe you prefer the quiet country life, etc., etc., you're not going to feel comfortable living in Shoreditch. You're going to want to live somewhere like Ambridge, if you follow the Archers. So it's absolutely important, and it's not about right and wrong or good and bad. It's about whether somebody fits a culture or not. But if an organization doesn't have a defined and demonstrable culture, Sophie, how do they try and attract the people that will fit that culture? Do organizations spend enough time examining and defining and refining and communicating what their culture is?
Well, I think everybody has a culture. Every company has a culture. And the fact that they don't have that defined culture is their culture, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, and again, this is the biggest part of the work that I do, is when I go into organisations and they say to me, you know, we're having a cultural refresh, or we want to launch this new way of working and it's all about our culture, et cetera, et cetera. All these wonderful, glorious buzzwords, and they've done the work on the values and they've done these posters and this, that and the other, but the culture's not working. What's wrong? We need to go back and revisit these statements. No, what needs to happen is you haven't embedded it. So as you were talking about it from a recruitment perspective, absolutely, you need to be talking about what the experience is like working in your organisation. And it should be very much values-led and you should be recruiting for those values over skill. But what I often see is, most people know this, and even people listening to this podcast will not disagree with this, that you should be recruiting for attitude over skill. I think that's just a given now, that most people would recognise that. But what seems to be falling down is the fact that when you then look at the job adverts, it is highly competency-based, or there'll be a few token words in there about what culture is, and, you know, we're looking for people that act with honesty and integrity, and if this sounds like you, come work for us. But that's really one-sided. That job advert actually is very much about, I want to take from you. And then you'll probably notice at the bottom of the job advert, there'll be a one or two line, perhaps even stretch into a couple of sentences, which talk about what you will get in return by working for that organisation. That in itself tells you about the culture of the organisation. Versus one that starts the advert talking about, by joining us in this role, you can expect a career of X, Y, and Z. We will help guide you and coach you through your experience with us. We'll provide you with all the necessary tools so that you can be the best you can be. We pride ourselves on using this particular piece of software. If you're not up to scratch with that, don't worry. We'll guide you and support you. We've got an amazing team of experts to help you be the best you can be to deliver this project. Now, that advert, which is more about what the experience you're going to get, what we're going to give you for your contribution, versus the, you must have 15 years worth of experience of working in this industry, you must have led on 5 significant projects, you must have a degree in X, Y, and Z, and in compensation for that, we will give you a pension, and we will give you, I don't know, a bonus scheme, and X, Y, and Z. The two read very, very differently and paint a very different perspective for you in terms of the culture. The second point I wanted to talk about in terms of embedding, so that's your recruitment piece, but then it has to be in your learning and development strategy. Don't say that you're a values-driven organisation, this is your culture, this is how we behave, and then all of your learning and development is around the technical piece. It's like saying, I don't know, you're a veterinary practice and your culture is, say, putting people at our core, and your values are honesty, integrity, collaboration, and creativity. And then all of your L&D is around the medical and technical perspectives of being a vet. What you're not doing is developing the creativity, the collaboration, the honesty, the integrity bit. So you need to devise a learning and development strategy that helps people learn and develop skills to be creative, that helps people develop a way of connecting with each other so they can collaborate. So that falls down from an L&D perspective. Then we have performance management, which I've got on my soapbox before about. But in the appraisal process, how weighted is that discussion, whether it's appraisals or one-to-ones, around the achievement of the KPIs versus the behaviour that accompanied those outputs? That is where your culture is defined, is in those discussions around the values and behaviours. And it goes all the way through your reward mechanism. It goes all the way through your induction and onboarding process. Let me share with you an example of a company in the US called Zappos. I don't know if many people listening or even yourselves, guys, have heard of Zappos.
Yes, I haven't
heard of them.
They are a really big American shoe retailer. And this organization will hire you based purely on how well you fit their values and behaviors. So actually, they're not that overly interested in your technical competence. If you come into the organization with the right values, they will get you in the right position. Now, they don't actually recruit people for certain jobs either. You just apply to work for them. You don't apply to be the PR manager or the customer service representative. You apply to work for Zappos. And depending on your values and behaviors, and depending on what your interests are and where your strengths are, they will find the right project for you to work on. But the main point around this organization is that after you have completed your probationary period, they offer you $2,000 to leave the organisation. And I think that's quite profound, that if you don't feel like you belong, or this is not the organisation for you, like you was talking about, Ray, if you don't feel Australia is for you and that culture doesn't fit, then we are offering you the opportunity to leave with $2,000 for you to then feel comfortable. You've got a little bit of a buffer to say that isn't right and move on and find somewhere else to work. And that is how much they protect their culture. And I'm not saying by any stretch that giving £2,000 or whatever the equivalent is in this country for people to leave after a probationary period if they don't feel it's working out, I'm not saying we should do that, but what I'm saying to you is the level of importance that that company places on culture is utmost, because your recruitment process should be the most important process you have in your organisation, other than paying people.
Well,
be the guardians, in order to make sure you safeguard people and making sure that you bring the right people into your organisation, because from a HR perspective, trying to get the wrong people out of your organisation is just, I mean, I don't know how many people have experienced that, but in my experience of dealing with these situations, it's costly, it's hard work, it's anxiety ridden for both you and the employee. So get it right from the recruitment perspective and you're already onto a winning path.
Well, I was just going to say, like, on the $2,000, that probably makes complete economic sense, because anybody who's been through an experience of where there's high churn, whether it be you need to get rid of people because they're not the right fit or they're not performing for whatever reason or whatever it is, that is infinitely more expensive. And a lot of organizations picked up on that churn was costing them a fortune, and did a lot of development and training around better recruitment and selection. And I, you know, I was part of some of those training courses. I benefited from some of them, but looking back on them now, again, it wasn't actually based around culture. It wasn't actually declared up front. So, you know, they said, right, okay, so when you get people in the interview room, you want to have a level of interview with them whereby you get a sense of the person and whether they're going to fit the team. But the adverts were still the adverts. You know, we want a civil engineer with X amount of years experience, blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, well, you know, it's not, clearly they hadn't grasped. They'd realized what the problem was on a superficial level. In other words, the impact it was having on the bottom line. They didn't actually truly understand what was driving that behavior. And so it was kind of a little bit token and led and meaningless.
Quite often when I talk about this, there's I get a lot of feedback saying, well, so that's completely impractical because I work for a doctor's surgery. We can't just recruit people based on values and behaviours. We have to have people that are qualified doctors. I mean, you wouldn't want an unqualified person giving you a heart operation just because they fit the values. And I just want to reiterate with this whole point, that's not at all what I'm saying here in terms of values and behaviours versus qualifications. But what it does mean is that just because somebody has the technical skill to do their job does not mean they're the right fit for your culture. And you must make sure that there's that good balance of the two. So anyway, got some.
Yeah, Gary. Well, just on that, sorry, Sophie, just to say, like, I come from a very heavily regulated industry, and technical competence is absolutely a requirement. But it just depends on how you order your filters. You know, if your filter is technical requirements first, and then we'll try and get the person that best fits the organization, you're limiting your possibilities. Whereas if you get somebody who fits the culture of the organization and has the technical requirements to do the job, albeit they might not be their best technical candidate, actually their ability to grow and develop and challenge and push and you know, move the business forward is far greater than somebody who ticks all the technical boxes but culturally really isn't invested in the organization. Because when we come down to performance and what you know, why people go the extra mile when some others don't, that is much more to do with cultural fit than salary or benefits or anything else like that. But yeah. I wanted to ask Gary, obviously, Gary, your experience is more from the creative industries like journalism and marketing and stuff like that. You know, what's your experience of this whole subject been?
Yes, well, if I can start just with echoing much of what Sophie said, and the Zappos example is a superb one, because just for a little bit more detail, they actually take on people as, they call them insiders, so they take on a general role within the company, and they're assigned a team ambassador. That ambassador has access to the online video cover letter the person sent in, the online chats. They then connect them with relevant employees within the organization so they can tap into those people's expertise and get a feel for their area of interest. Anybody who's not a local applicant, they get free travel from the airport to the headquarters in Vegas. And interestingly, the driver reports back to the company about how they were treated. And if the driver is badly treated, that person is not taken on.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
So it's that they say, look, if you can't treat the people at all levels of the organization in the same way, you don't fit with our values. So it's not just, you know, we'll doff our cap to the CEO. It's no, every person from kind of janitor upwards is treated with dignity and respect. And as Sophie said, after the 4 weeks of training and a week on the job, they basically get paid for that time, but they're also offered this $2,000 bonus. You know, they say, if you want to walk away, that's fine. Here's the money, because they just want people who've got the right attitude. And apparently only about 2 or 3% actually take up the offer.
Yeah. It's 97% of people stay.
Yeah. So, and that breeds, you know, fans, team ambassadors, people who are going to really shout. You know, you can imagine you don't have to advertise for jobs, because these people are going to be sharing on social media what a great job they've got, or their friends will be saying, oh wow, you always seem so happy. It's like, oh, I love my job, and you know, it's I really love that approach. I think it's a standout one. But back to the sort of media world and so on, I mean, I've actually been doing a little bit of a research project on, just for my own interest, looking at you know, job adverts and what's out there in the market right now. And one of the things I've noticed, that in most of the job ads are absolutely terrible. They all sound the same, mm-hmm. even though these companies are very different companies. They're in different countries, different parts of the UK, and yet everyone it sounds the same. I'm thinking, if I were looking for a job, you know, none of these people are selling their values, their personality. What's in it for me? A lot of it is, you know, we need someone to fill this. Do you want a fast-paced, and it's all these kind of buzzwords, or as if someone's just taken, here's the 10 phrases you need to use, chuck them in.
Yeah.
And that'll sound good, won't it? Whereas for me, it's like, well, no, I don't want a fast-paced, you know, actually, but I want someone who's saying, you know, let's do the job properly. Mm. Let's actually explain to the client that actually for some of our best work, we need a bit more time. If you want the McDonald's approach, that's fine. But if you want something a bit classier, that's going to actually generate better results. So I'd be looking for a company that's offering that, but there's none of that, because it's all this, you know, hey, you go get into what fast paced, you know, and, you know, you get a lunch voucher and, you know, we'll give you your birthday off, and that's it.
When I read fast paced and, you know, high energy and stuff in job adverts, I always have this image of, you know, a Norse longship, where you've got the, you know, the oarsman sort of in the boat, and you've got some guy banging a drum at the front, and because that's what it's going to be, folks. You know, if somebody is trying to entice you on the basis of, we pay a great salary, we give you great benefits, it's going to be high energy, fast paced, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're a commodity. And by the way, customers of those companies, you're a commodity too. That's how they see you. Because that reflects exactly how they feel about people and, by extension, their customers. And if you look at the people like Simon Sinek, what they will tell you is that actually the best thing that you can do is market your why, market your mission, mm-hmm. market your purpose, because that will then naturally create people to gravitate towards you, because they, what you believe as an organization fits in with what they believe about themselves. And you're going to find people who are your employees and your customers, not for you, but for them. And that breeds loyalty, because they're in it for themselves. They're invested in it. They're not there just because you pay slightly higher than the next person. And coming from the construction industry, where, you know, for years, like, we used to have situations on construction sites where, you know, people would literally move from one employer to another in a day, because, you know, there'd be a plasterer over there who's earning 50p an hour more. And so you'd leave the company you're working for, and you'd be working for that company tomorrow. And then you could be back with the other company next week, because they suddenly decide they're going to pay a bit more. And that's what you had going on. Now, there's been various initiatives done to try and address that by having sort of common rate cards and that sort of thing. But that's largely what goes on with an awful lot of job adverts. It's, you know, we're going to try and entice you by the money we're going to offer you and the benefits we're going to give you, because actually we don't feel confident that we can attract you based on our values. That's quite interesting.
What was coming up when you were saying that, Ray, is I think there's two key things when it comes to culture. There's the horizontal integration of your culture. There's the vertical integration. And I think the way I see the vertical bit is about the top people leading the vision. And that's where that why comes from. Really, really embedding that why into what you're doing, and then how that manifests itself into the thoughts and feelings and actions of the organization. And I was thinking about an example of where I was at a conference, and there was a speaker who was talking on stage about all the fantastic things that her organization's doing. Quite a radical organization, thinking very differently to, you know, not quite on the same level as Zappos, but certainly doing some very, very clever things. And she was just so passionate about what she did, what the organization did. And it wasn't until the very end she actually told us what the organization did. And they made cat flaps. Now, seemingly, cat flaps are not a very sexy product. They're not something that everybody in the market needs to have. If you're a cat owner, you may not even need to have a cat flap. So a very, very niche market. But the way she was talking about what her staff were doing, and the way her staff were being portrayed, they had videos and, you know, staff talking about the various initiatives, it came through. It was the passion that won the day. It wasn't the product. Vertical integration, really, for me, is where that passion really stems down from the why at the top to the person at the very bottom. So thinking about Zappos again, that passion was coming through from the taxi driver, the person that was doing the driving for Zappos, all the way through to Tony Hsieh, who's the chief executive. That, for me, really defines what the culture is. And then your vertical integration is the extent to which your policies, practices, recruitment stacks up to delivering that passion and showing the world what that passion is and showing your staff what that passion is.
And like, in terms of marketing, Gary, you specifically, because that's your bag, a bit of a leading question. How well do you think organizations use their culture and communicate their culture through their marketing?
Yes, again, I think most businesses have some work to do. I mean, there are some companies that do it very well. I think the ones that are doing it best are the ones that are able to tell it through story. And that is not just about their why, but also, I think, as it sounds from this lady who is presenting about the cat flap company, it seems that they were using either sort of videos or examples of how they're working. So stories are really good, and video really good at just showing people. So rather than saying we're passionate, a number of times I've had people saying, you know, I'm passionate about this, and that's fine, but you don't actually have to put that on your website, because it's a bit like the honesty, it's a bit like the honesty and integrity thing. Yeah. It's like that passion should be coming through from your website and the copy and how you present. It should come through, you know, from the way that you speak when you're talking. People should get it. They don't need to tell them that. They'll just go, boy, you know, he was passionate. She was passionate, wasn't she? You know, it wasn't because she said it 10 times. It was because, you know, it's like, wow, you could really see that this meant something to them. So in terms of marketing, just coming back to those core things about your why and your values and how you do stuff. Sometimes could be how you make your product or how it gets from, you know, start point to finish point could be the thing that really sells the value of what you offer somebody. You know, I've talked before about the, you know, the kitchen company where the wood came from a particular part of Norway, and this particular kitchen maker, they were the, you know, they had exclusive, you know, supplies of this wood. And once people could see and, you know, hear about the qualities of the wood and the craftsmanship involved, they suddenly realised that's why you're paying so much for the kitchen. Wasn't then a cost thing. It was like, boy, I really love to have one of those. So you're changing the perceptions of people or demonstrating your value.
Well, that's one of the definitions of loyalty, isn't it, in terms of brand, that you will engage with that brand or that product, even if it is inconvenient for you to do so, whether it's a price inconvenience or a time inconvenience or whatever, it actually won't matter. And at that stage, you're not competing on a price point commodity sort of basis, because people have bought into what you do. You know, Harley Davidson, people get their logo, their brand tattooed on their actual bodies, for crying out loud. You know, people will wait 6 months to get a Harley Davidson motorcycle. Because, you know, by buying that and having that motorcycle, it tells the world something about them. And that's where that's coming from. I wanted to talk about culture. So it's interesting because there's been obviously a lot of conversations recently in the media and out of the media about, you know, this been an opportunity to reset and stuff like that, and companies actually finding out that where they thought they were secure and everything else, they're actually quite vulnerable. And then I started looking at, you know, the whole setup of some of our larger organizations and why, you know, why certain things are the way they are in large organizations. I found it interesting that the average tenure for a chief exec of a FTSE 100 company is 5.5 years. I think that's significant, because that doesn't seem like a very long time to engender a culture. And where you've got people at the top being regularly recycled, you wonder how any vision, purpose, mission statement for any organization is actually carried through. Because actually, I think a lot of that turnover, that churn has been pushed by shareholders just looking at the very short-term bottom line. And the fact that a lot of C-suite executives' remuneration is linked to stock holding and share price and stuff like that suggests that, because there's this push towards being very short term in terms of investors, you know, we want to try and get as much out of the company in as short a period of time and then move on. There's this constant drive for bottom line without any real focus on long term sustainability and long term performance. And so that then made me think about culture and whether actually we're going backwards in terms of organizations and the importance that they place on having strong culture and defined culture. And so I wanted to take this opportunity to get some input from you guys as regards to the whole conversation around culture. So what is it? You know, how does it work? How do you see it? Et cetera, et cetera. So culture, what do we mean when we talk about culture?
Well, a lot of my work is centered around culture. In fact, that's the main premise of my business and what I do. So this is a very interesting question, a very key topic, actually, I think, especially given the situation that we're currently facing. And for me, Culture is the thoughts, the feelings, the actions of the organisation. And when I say thoughts and feelings, it's not, you know, it's not human. It doesn't have thoughts and feelings in the same way. But it's the way by which your staff are guided to make certain decisions. There's like an underlying assumptions, an underlying feeling as to this is a culture that supports X or this is a culture that supports Y, and therefore we make decisions in line with that. And that is where your values and your behaviours and your mission statement become absolutely crucial to that. It's the thing by which you should be assessing every decision you make against. And I think that's one of the key things that is missing or is starting to be missing right now. I've started quite an interesting discussion online over people will remember your culture for the bad times and not for the good. So it's all wonderful when your organization is profitable, or if you work in the public sector like I mainly do, everything's working well and there's no major pandemic or issues within the service that you're providing. That's wonderful. But what you will find is your staff will define your culture and how they feel from a psychological safety perspective about your culture based on how you dealt with the bad times, how you dealt with the financial downturn, how you dealt with the fact that perhaps you've got people in your organisation who are suffering with COVID-19 or have even died of this awful virus, and how you dealt with that, how you provided the safety your staff needed. That, for me, is a very long-winded definition of culture.
Gary?
For me, culture, and I think we are experiencing a test of culture for organisations right now, a very specific one. And for me, it's around simple questions of, for an organisation, you know, who we are, how we are, so the way that we do things, and also the way that we just are. So it's the doing and the being. And that, as Sophie said, it's very much down to kind of those values. Do companies have values? Are they genuine values? And are they operating and living to those values? That will show up hopefully when the times are good. But right now, what I'm seeing, and the companies that are impressing me, are the ones who are demonstrating that they've got these strong values, and they're not just thinking about short-termism. They're also thinking about how they're treating people, you know, whatever decisions have to be made. And I think it will impact, you know, not just the employees, but also I think customers. They'll be looking at, you know, how are these companies operating right now? Are they operating from a good place, or do they seem to be, you know, kind of just, well, we'll just look after the C-suite and the shareholders, and, you know, we'll let things like, you know, customer service and just the, you know, way we treat people, that kind of goes out the window a bit. So it's fascinating to watch how different organizations are doing things at the moment.
That's very interesting, what you both say there, because my experience is that organizations talk about their culture a lot, but actually it's just words. Mm-hmm. And sometimes quite often if you look at mission statements, for example, it's generally the same stuff. It's blah, blah, shareholders, blah, blah, customers, blah, 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 people. But it's meaningless drivel. It's got no direction. It doesn't tell you anything about the organization. It's just they've engaged a consultant to come up with some clever words that actually mm-hmm. don't mean anything. And even worse than that, what I've actually found within organizations that I've worked with, not in every case, I hasten to add, but in a lot of cases, the majority of cases, the culture that exists in the organization and the culture that the C-suite believe exists in the organization are totally different. Mm-hmm. And there's a disconnection there between what the leadership team believe is the culture of the organization and what the reality is on the ground. And you've got to wonder, I mean, we've talked before about getting back to the floor and all that sort of thing. you've got to ask yourself the question, is that perhaps a communication issue? You know, do our executives actually place enough importance and enough effort and energy into making sure that the culture of the organization is communicated? Because whether you're a customer or a potential employee or a long-term employee, really the culture of the organization needs to be in your face, because it needs to be demonstrated by everything that organization says and does. And for me, it's just a lot of hollowness around culture. People have picked up on this whole thing of, oh, you know, we must have a strong culture and we must demonstrate our culture and it must be socially responsible and look after people and everything else. And then they produce these fantastic strap lines and mission statements. And as soon as you walk in the door, you realize that this is not the reality.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I tell you how what I see. So like I said, the vast majority of my work is about transforming organizational cultures from being in a place of perhaps what you've just described there, Ray, actually, around senior leadership having quite a different take on culture versus how staff see it. And there are two fundamental things that I see cropping up here. Is one, the culture hasn't been co-created. So what's happened is the C-suite, the leaders in the organisation have all got together and have said, this is the vision, okay? This is what we think our values are, et cetera, et cetera. And because we are the leaders and we're setting this vision, we are now going to just tell you, this is how you now need to behave. So they'll come up with some value statements and they'll say, oh, yeah, these look good. And the way we're going to tell you that is we're going to stick them up on the wall. As you say, there are going to be some great statements on the wall in reception, and we might even have some mugs printed, and your screensaver or the background of your computer will have it on there. And what we will do is we will produce some physical artifacts that say this is what we believe in, this is what drives us. Which then comes on to the second thing, is that people can't be told how to behave. They've got to be shown how to behave, and they've got to believe in the fact that they should be behaving in that way. And the downfall is that when you're trying to create a culture, so many organisations seem to think that posters on the walls and telling people, oh, today you have to be honest, today you have to act with integrity, is going to bring that behaviour about. And that doesn't happen like that. They have to see it role modelled, and they have to be shown the tools and techniques and a kind of a psychological understanding of what that physically means to do those things in order for them to exhibit that behaviour.
Yeah, and isn't it frightening if an organisation has to put a poster up saying honesty and integrity?
But they all do.
Yeah.
But they all do.
Because they're very buzzwordy, kind of impressive-looking things, but actually they're meaningless because they're just nouns. They're not verbs.
Yeah, no action. Exactly.
No, I was just going to add on to that and just say, yeah, if I saw somebody expressing or an organisation expressing values as honesty and integrity, I'd just say you need to remove those from your values list, because we take those as a given.
You should, absolutely you should. But let me tell you how many organisations I work with that have those in their value statements. It's incredible how many do. And the fact they have to put them up on the wall, they have to tell you that this is what we believe in, is a problem, because you as a consumer or you as a member of staff should know that.
Yes.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah, you know the organisations that you know exhibit those behaviours, and you know the organisations that don't. But they're not telling you that. They're not saying, oh, we're an organisation that operates in honesty and integrity. They're just being it. And that's the difference to a culture that is absolutely truly aligned and everybody is in line with that culture and they're all sitting from the same hymn sheet versus a disjointed culture. Because you shouldn't need to put those words up at all. It should be something that everyone, like I said at the beginning, is thinking and feeling without needing that.
Yeah. And when you advertise positions, it almost should be the very first block of text in the
absolutely.
Advert. This
absolutely.
Is our culture. Because yeah. I did want to ask you guys about this, what your thoughts are on cultural fit over competence, because we often make our decisions based on, and our adverts reflect this for our people, by the way. So we make all of these technical requirements, you know, you have to have a degree in this or experience of that or whatever. And then we'll maybe put something in at the bottom about our culture, when actually, you know, a lot of effective leaders will tell you it's virtually impossible to teach somebody certain behaviors that to fit in with the organization. If you get the right cultural fit, you can basically teach anybody the technical skills that they need to have with a certain level of baseline of competence, of course. But actually, that the most, and what absolutely destroys organizations and teams is when they end up with that imbalance of people. People are there for the wrong reasons. Mm-mm. That just completely, we've probably all had experiences where, you know, we've worked in a good team and then somebody has come into the team who isn't the right cultural fit, and it's completely thrown everything up in the air. And that's not to say that there's anything wrong with that individual. It's just that, like, if you look at it as an individual person thing. So I know people, as an Irish person, we have a lot of immigration from Ireland. And I know people who've emigrated to Australia and, you know, have never looked back. Absolutely love it. You know, it really fits in with the sort of person that they want to be. And it really chimes with what they believe about themselves. I've had other people go there with, you know, with exactly the same experience and competencies and everything else, and lasted, you could count it in the weeks before they've come back, because it just didn't suit them culturally. And there's nothing wrong with Australia, and there's nothing wrong with those individuals. It's just that, you know, you sometimes you're just the right person in the wrong place. And there's nothing wrong with that. And what you find in terms of it, like internationally, is people coalesce to where they feel psychologically safe and where they feel they fit in. So, you know, if you maybe want to be a very cosmopolitan, sort of a little bit leftish, you know, person, there's certain parts of London that you might want to find yourself in, the likes of Shoreditch and everything else. If you're somebody who has different values and feels differently about yourself, maybe you prefer the quiet country life, etc., etc., you're not going to feel comfortable living in Shoreditch. You're going to want to live somewhere like Ambridge, if you follow the Archers. So it's absolutely important, and it's not about right and wrong or good and bad. It's about whether somebody fits a culture or not. But if an organization doesn't have a defined and demonstrable culture, Sophie, how do they try and attract the people that will fit that culture? Do organizations spend enough time examining and defining and refining and communicating what their culture is?
Well, I think everybody has a culture. Every company has a culture. And the fact that they don't have that defined culture is their culture, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, and again, this is the biggest part of the work that I do, is when I go into organisations and they say to me, you know, we're having a cultural refresh, or we want to launch this new way of working, and it's all about our culture, et cetera, et cetera. All these wonderful, glorious buzzwords, and they've done the work on the values, and they've done these posters, and this, that, and the other, but the culture's not working. What's wrong? We need to go back and revisit these statements. No, what needs to happen is you haven't embedded it. So as you were talking about it from a recruitment perspective, absolutely, you need to be talking about what the experience is like working in your organisation. And it should be very much values-led, and you should be recruiting for those values over skill. But what I often see is, most people know this, and even people listening to this podcast will not disagree with this, that you should be recruiting for attitude over skill. I think that's just a given now, that most people would recognise that. But what seems to be falling down is the fact that when you then look at the job adverts, it is highly competency based, or there'll be a few token words in there about what culture is. And, you know, we're looking for people that act with honesty and integrity. And if this sounds like you, come work for us. But that's really one-sided. That job advert actually is very much about, I want to take from you. And then you'll probably notice at the bottom of the job advert, there'll be a one or two line, perhaps even stretch into a couple of sentences, which talk about what you will get in return by working for that organisation. That in itself tells you about the culture of the organisation. Versus one that starts the advert talking about, by joining us in this role, you can expect a career of X, Y, and Z. We will help guide you and coach you through your experience with us. We'll provide you with all the necessary tools so that you can be the best you can be. We pride ourselves on using this particular piece of software. If you're not up to scratch with that, don't worry. We'll guide you and support you. We've got an amazing team of experts to help you be the best you can be to deliver this project. Now, that advert, which is more about the experience you're going to get, what we're going to give you for your contribution, versus the, you must have 15 years worth of experience of working in this industry. You must have led on 5 significant projects. You must have a degree in X, Y, and Z. And in compensation for that, we will give you a pension and we will give you, I don't know, a bonus scheme and X, Y, and Z. The two read very, very differently and paint a very different perspective for you in terms of the culture. The second point I wanted to talk about in terms of embedding, so that's your recruitment piece, but then it has to be in your learning and development strategy. Don't say that you're a values-driven organisation, this is your culture, this is how we behave, and then all of your learning and development is around the technical piece. It's like saying, I don't know, you're a veterinary practice and your culture is, say, putting people at our core, and your values are honesty, integrity, collaboration, and creativity. And then all of your L&D is around the medical and technical perspectives of being a vet. What you're not doing is developing the creativity, the collaboration, the honesty, the integrity bit. So you need to devise a learning and development strategy that helps people learn and develop skills to be creative, that helps people develop a way of connecting with each other so they can collaborate. So that falls down from the L&D perspective. Then we have performance management, which I've got on my soapbox before about. But in the appraisal process, how weighted is that discussion, whether it's appraisals or one-to-ones, around the achievement of the KPIs versus the behaviour that accompanied those outputs? That is where your culture is defined, is in those discussions around the values and behaviours. And it goes all the way through your reward mechanism. It goes all the way through your induction and onboarding process. Let me share with you an example of a company in the US called Zappos. I don't know if many people listening or even yourselves, guys, have heard of Zappos.
Yes, I have.
I haven't heard of them.
They are a really big American shoe retailer. And this organization will hire you based purely on how well you fit their values and behaviors. So actually, they're not that overly interested in your technical competence. If you come into the organization with the right values, they will get you in the right position. Now, they don't actually recruit people for certain jobs either. You just apply to work for them. You don't apply to be the PR manager or the customer service representative. You apply to work for Zappos. And depending on your values and behaviors, and depending on what your interests are and where your strengths are, they will find the right project for you to work on. But the main point around this organization is that after you have completed your probationary period, they offer you $2,000 to leave the organization. And I think that's quite profound, that if you don't feel like you belong or this is not the organization for you, like you was talking about, Ray, if you don't feel Australia is for you and that culture doesn't fit, then we are offering you the opportunity to leave. with $2,000 for you to then feel comfortable, you've got a little bit of a buffer to say that isn't right and move on and find somewhere else to work. And that is how much they protect their culture. And I'm not saying by any stretch that giving £2,000 or whatever the equivalent is in this country for people to leave after a probationary period if they don't feel it's working out. I'm not saying we should do that, but what I'm saying to you is the level of importance that that company places on culture is utmost, because your recruitment process should be the most important process you have in your organisation, other than paying people.
Well,
in order to make sure you safeguard people and making sure that you bring the right people into your organisation, because from a HR perspective, trying to get the wrong people out of your organisation is just, I mean, I don't know how many people have experienced that, but in my experience of dealing with these situations, it's costly, it's hard work, it's anxiety ridden for both you and the employee. So get it right from the recruitment perspective and you're already onto a winning path.
Well, I was just going to say, like, on the $2,000, that probably makes complete economic sense, because anybody who's been through an experience of where there's high churn, whether it be you need to get rid of people because they're not the right fit or they're not performing for whatever reason or whatever it is, that is infinitely more expensive. And a lot of organizations picked up on that churn was costing them a fortune, and did a lot of development and training around better recruitment and selection. And I, you know, I was part of some of those training courses. I benefited from some of them, but looking back on them now, again, it wasn't actually based around culture. It wasn't actually declared up front. So, you know, they said, right, okay, so when you get people in the interview room, you want to have a level of interview with them whereby you get a sense of the person and whether they're going to fit into the team. But the adverts were still the adverts. You know, we want a civil engineer with X amount of years experience, blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, well, you know, it's not, clearly they hadn't grasped. They'd realized what the problem was on a superficial level. In other words, the impact it was having on the bottom line. They didn't actually truly understand what was driving that behavior.
Mm.
And so it was kind of a little bit token and led and meaningless.
Quite often when I talk about this, there's I get a lot of feedback saying, well, so that's completely impractical because I work for a doctor's surgery. We can't just recruit people based on values and behaviours. We have to have people that are qualified doctors. I mean, you wouldn't want an unqualified person giving you a heart operation just because they fit the values. And I just want to reiterate with this whole point, that's not at all what I'm saying here in terms of values and behaviours versus qualifications. But what it does mean is that just because somebody has the technical skill to do their job does not mean they're the right fit for your culture, and you must make sure that there's that good balance of the two. So anyway, got some.
Yeah, Gary. Well, just on that, sorry, Sophie, just to say, like, I come from a very heavily regulated industry, and technical competence is absolutely a requirement. Mm. But it just depends on how you order your filters. You know, if your filter is technical requirements first, and then we'll try and get the person that best fits the organization, you're limiting your possibilities. Whereas if you get somebody who fits the culture of the organization and has the technical requirements to do the job, albeit they might not be their best technical candidate, actually their ability to grow and develop and challenge and push and you know, move the business forward is far greater than somebody who ticks all the technical boxes but culturally really isn't invested in the organization. Because when we come down to performance and what, you know, why people go the extra mile when some others don't, that is much more to do with cultural fit than salary or benefits or anything else like that. But I wanted to ask Gary, obviously Gary, your experience is more from the creative industries like journalism and marketing and stuff like that. You know, what's your experience of this whole subject been?
Yes, well, if I can start just with echoing much of what Sophie said, and the Zappos example is a superb one, because just for a little bit more detail, they actually take on people as, they call them insiders. So they take on a general role within the company, and they're assigned a team ambassador. That ambassador has access to the online video cover letter the person sent in, the online chats. They then connect them with relevant employees within the organization so they can tap into those people's expertise and get a feel for their area of interest. Anybody who's not a local applicant, they get free travel from the airport to the headquarters in Vegas. And interestingly, the driver reports back to the company about how they were treated. And if the driver is badly treated, that person is not taken on.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
So it's that they say, look, if you can't treat the people at all levels of the organization in the same way, you don't fit with our values. So it's not just, you know, we'll doff our cap to the CEO. It's no, every person from kind of janitor upwards is treated with dignity and respect. And as Sophie said, after the 4 weeks of training and a week on the job, they basically get paid for that time, but they're also offered this $2,000 bonus. You know, they say, if you want to walk away, that's fine. Here's the money, because they just want people who've got the right attitude. And apparently only about 2 or 3% actually take up the offer.
Yeah. It's 97% of people stay.
Yeah. So, and that breeds, you know, fans, team ambassadors, people who are going to really shout. You know, you would imagine you don't have to advertise for jobs, because these people are going to be sharing on social media what a great job they've got, or their friends will be saying, oh wow, you always seem so happy. It's like, well, I love my job, and you know, it's I really love that approach. I think it's a standout one. But back to the sort of media world and so on, I mean, I've actually been doing a little bit of a research project on, just for my own interest, looking at you know, job adverts and what's out there in the market right now. And one of the things I've noticed, that in most of the job ads are absolutely terrible. They all sound the same, mm-hmm. even though these companies are very different companies. They're in different countries, different parts of the UK, and yet everyone just, it sounds the same. I'm thinking, if I were looking for a job, you know, none of these people are selling their values, their personality. What's in it for me? A lot of it is, you know, we need someone to fill this. Do you want a fast-paced, and it's all these kind of buzzwords, or as if someone's just taken, here's the 10 phrases you need to use, chuck them in.
Yeah.
And that'll sound good, won't it? Whereas for me, it's like, well, no, I don't want a fast pace, you know, actually, but I want someone who's saying, you know, let's do the job properly. Mm. Let's actually explain to the client that actually for some of our best work, we need a bit more time. If you want the McDonald's approach, that's fine. But if you want something a bit classier, that's going to actually generate better results. So I'd be looking for a company that's offering that, but there's none of that, because it's all this, you know, hey, you go get into what fast paced, you know, and, you know, you get a lunch voucher and, you know, we'll give you your birthday off, and that's it.
When I read fast paced and, you know, high energy and stuff in job adverts, I always have this image of, you know, a Norse longship, where you've got the, you know, the oarsman sort of in the boat, and you've got some guy banging a drum at the front, and because that's what it's going to be, folks. You know, if somebody is trying to entice you on the basis of, we pay a great salary, we give you great benefits, it's going to be high energy, fast paced, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're a commodity. And by the way, customers of those companies, you're a commodity too. That's how they see you. Because that reflects exactly how they feel about people and, by extension, their customers. And if you look at the people like Simon Sinek, what they will tell you is that actually the best thing that you can do is market your why, market your mission, mm-hmm. market your purpose, because that will then naturally create people to gravitate towards you, because they... what you believe as an organization fits in with what they believe about themselves. And you're going to find people who are your employees and your customers, not for you, but for them. And that breeds loyalty, because they're in it for themselves. They're invested in it. They're not there just because you pay slightly higher than the next person. And coming from the construction industry, where, You know, for years, like, we used to have situations on construction sites where, you know, people would literally move from one employer to another in a day because, you know, there'd be a plasterer over there who's earning 50p an hour more. And so you'd leave the company you're working for and you'd be working for that company tomorrow. And then you could be back with the other company next week because they suddenly decide they're going to pay a bit more. And that's what you had going on. Now, there's been various initiatives done to try and address that by having sort of common rate cards and that sort of thing. But that's largely what goes on with an awful lot of job adverts. It's, you know, we're going to try and entice you by the money we're going to offer you and the benefits we're going to give you, because actually we don't feel confident that we can attract you based on our values. That's quite interesting.
What was coming up when you were saying that, Ray, is I think there's two key things when it comes to culture. There's the horizontal integration of your culture. There's the vertical integration. And I think the way I see the vertical bit is about the top people leading the vision. And that's where that why comes from. Really, really embedding that why into what you're doing and then how that manifests itself into the thoughts and feelings and actions of the organization. And I was thinking about an example of where I was at a conference and there was a speaker who was talking on stage about all the fantastic things that her organization's doing, quite a radical organization, thinking very differently to, you know, not quite on the same level as Zappos, but certainly doing some very, very clever things. And she was just so passionate about what she did, what the organisation did. And it wasn't until the very end she actually told us what the organisation did. And they made cat flaps. Now, seemingly, cat flaps are not a very sexy product. They're not something that everybody in the market needs to have. If you're a cat owner, you may not even need to have a cat flap. So a very, very niche market. But the way she was talking about what her staff were doing and the way her staff were being portrayed, they had videos and, you know, staff talking about the various initiatives. It came through. It was the passion that won the day. It wasn't the product. Vertical integration, really, for me, is where that passion really stems down from the why at the top to the person at the very bottom. So thinking about Zappos again, that passion was coming through from the taxi driver, the person that was doing the drive-in for Zappos, all the way through to Tony Hsieh, who's the chief executive. That for me really defines what the culture is. And then your vertical integration is the extent to which your policies, practices, recruitment stacks up to delivering that passion and showing the world what that passion is and showing your staff what that passion is.
And like, in terms of marketing, Gary, you specifically, because that's your bag, a bit of a leading question. How well do you think organizations use their culture and communicate their culture through their marketing?
Yes, again, I think most businesses have some work to do. I mean, there are some companies that do it very well. I think the ones that are doing it best are the ones that are able to tell it through story. And that is not just about their why, but also, I think, as it sounds from this lady who's presenting about the cat flap company, it seems that they were using either sort of videos or examples of how they're working. So stories are really good and video really good at just showing people. So rather than saying we're passionate, if a number of times I've had people saying, you know, I'm passionate about this, and that's fine, but you don't actually have to put that on your website, because it's a bit like the honesty and integrity thing. Yeah. It's like that passion should be coming through from your website and the copy and how you present. It should come through you know, from the way that you speak when you're talking. People should get it. They don't need to tell them that. They'll just go, boy, you know, he was passionate, she was passionate, wasn't she? You know, it wasn't because she said it 10 times. It was because, you know, it's like, wow, you could really see that this meant something to them. So in terms of marketing, just coming back to those core things about your why and your values and how you do stuff. Sometimes it's the could be how you make your product or how it gets from, you know, start point to finish point could be the thing that really sells the value of what you offer somebody. You know, I've talked before about the, you know, the kitchen company where the wood came from a particular part of Norway, and this particular kitchen maker, they were the, you know, they had exclusive, you know, supplies of this wood. And once people could see and, you know, hear about the qualities of the wood and the craftsmanship involved, they suddenly realized that's why you're paying so much for the kitchen. Wasn't then a cost thing. It was like, boy, I really would love to have one of those. So you're changing the perceptions of people or demonstrating your value.
Well, that's one of the definitions of loyalty, isn't it, in terms of brand, that you will engage with that brand or that product, even if it is inconvenient for you to do so, whether it's a price inconvenience or a time inconvenience or whatever, it actually won't matter. And at that stage, you're not competing on a price point commodity sort of basis, because people have bought into what you do. You know, Harley Davidson, people get their logo, their brand tattooed on their actual bodies, for crying out loud. You know, people will wait 6 months to get a Harley Davidson motorcycle. Because, you know, by buying that and having that motorcycle, it tells the world something about them. And that's where that's coming from. That's it for part one. Make sure to join us next week for part two. And in the meantime, don't forget to rate and review us. Thank you very much. Have a great week. Be safe, and we'll catch you next week. They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry?